Welcome to Singing and Other Sins, a production of Hawaii Public Radio, funded by the Bauer Foundation and supporters like you. Many thanks, member supporters. I'm Gary Hickling. The following program celebrates Labor Day and the 30th anniversary of Singing and Other Sins and its precursor, Great Songs. Usually, when producing a Labor Day program, I look for songs of a variety of occupations. And because many of the art songs I love are from the past, the jobs tend toward shepherds, blacksmiths, and fishermen. This year, I've contacted hard-working composers of art song who've responded with insight into their craft. Let's begin with Lori Leitman, who has composed operas and choral works and over 250 songs. Her music is widely performed, and a year ago we presented a whole Singing and Other Sins program of her art songs. Lori, how do you choose a poem?
How do I choose a poem? When I'm choosing a poem, I first have to feel that I understand it. I also have to feel some emotional connection to its message. And before I set any poem to music, I secure the rights from the poet or publisher or estate if the poem is not in the public domain. If the piece is not commissioned, I have free rein to choose whatever I would like. If I'm choosing a poem to use in a song that's a birthday present, for example, I try to pick an appropriate text that will suit or please the birthday person. If the work is commissioned, I confer with the person commissioning the song or cycle. Sometimes the commissioner has a particular poet or theme in mind, but I am given free rein to choose the poetry. Sometimes the commissioner has particular poems or a particular poet in mind. I always choose more poems than I will need for a cycle, and often don't decide upon the exact poems or sequence of poems in advance. I let the direction of the first song inform the choice of the next song, and so on. I have certain practical guidelines. It's best if the poems aren't too short or too long, although I have set both. It's important that the poem isn't too complex, as its meaning must be grasped orally. A poem that tells a story works well, and it's good if a poem doesn't have a lot of homonyms, again because the oral transmission might be confusing. It's great if the poem has some emotional breathing space so that the music can fill in what is left unsaid. I have also devoted a significant portion of my catalog to setting text about the Holocaust. The poetry gives voice to those who no longer have a voice and provides testimony for future generations. It's also been thrilling for me to work with living poets, and I have learned so much from all of my poets who see the world so uniquely.
Thanks, Lori, for that explanation of your work. Let's hear an example of your craft, Metropolitan Tower, which I believe was your very first art song. That was Lori Lateman's first art song, Metropolitan Tower, to the words of Sarah Teasdale. That was performed by Lauren Wagner with pianist Fred Weldy. But Lori, you told us how you choose the poem and all, but how does the music evolve?
How does the magic combination of words and music evolve? The words always come first for me, and each song is simply my interpretation of the poem or the libretto. My goal is to create dramatic music that expresses and magnifies the meaning of the words. I compose the vocal line first, custom crafting the melody to emphasize what I consider important in each line, but I also take great care to set the words properly for the singer. This enables the singer to then communicate the words effectively to the audience. Even though I have an idea of the harmonies I will use, I do not flesh out the accompaniment until the vocal line is complete. I typically craft the accompaniment to color the emotion behind the words, and all musical aspects, such as rhythm or texture, etc., are chosen to add additional layers of interpretation to the poem. Each song thus becomes my musical interpretation of the poem. I am always willing to adapt the vocal line for a particular singer, for my motto, stolen from soprano Lauren Wagner, is, "A happy singer is a good singer." I'm also happy to adapt instrumental parts if need be.
Thanks again, Lori, for letting us inside the world of the art song composer. Let's hear two more Lori Lateman songs, Men with Small Heads and If I, the last of the four Dickinson songs.
Men with small heads and women with small heads were everywhere in my hometown when I was six. Two men standing on the corner, small heads. Small head, a woman leans to look in her mailbox. Then there'd be some normal bodies, normal heads. Not everyone, in other words, in my hometown had small heads, but many did. Enough that I'd say to my mother, father, why does that man have a small head? I was glad my parents' heads were normal size. They were glad I mostly didn't ask why a person with a small head had a small head within earshot of that person. Apparently, these small heads did not appear so small to them. They had my eyes checked first. They took some x-rays of my skull. Did I have migraines? Did I have pinhead fears, dreams? Perhaps it was the angle through the windshield glass. The local doctor leaning over me with his pen like probing my retina. His head was huge and the hairs on the back of his head were crossed like swords. With my eyes or my brain that he could tell. But the heads I swore were small were not. They were just your average heads, circa 1953. Just your average heads in America.
Thank you.
We just heard two more Lori Lakeman songs, Men with Small Heads, Two Words by Thomas Lux. Randall Scarlatta was the baritone, and the composer herself played piano. Finally, we enjoyed Lakeman's If I, from her four Dickinson songs, performed by Melissa Coombs, soprano, with Lori Lakeman again as the pianist. What a joy for us to hear the inner workings of the mind of an art song composer and then to hear her actual songs. Many thanks for your participation, Lori. This is the Labor Day and 30th anniversary edition of Singing in Other Sins. Our next composer is Dominic Argento. He recently talked with Blair and me in preparation for a whole program of his work on October 27 to celebrate his 91st birthday. Argento is probably best known for his operas and choral music, though it was his art song cycle from the Diary of Virginia Woolf that won the Pulitzer Prize in 1975. Based in Minnesota, Argento has been commissioned to write many vocal works by artists and institutions of the Twin Cities. Mr. Argento, please tell us about your art song composing.
I don't think of myself as a song composer. I don't know whether any of my colleagues do who write a lot of songs. I write a lot of songs just because, to me, a song is the musical equivalent of a letter. It's something I think that we do in our lifetime, just a quick way of connecting with someone. I think of songs as letters in a sense that they are the fastest way of communicating. They're short and brief and stated to the point. I think they're probably more truthful than, say, advertisements are or commercials. I think they're the most honest form of communicating, and no one I don't know has ever written a song where there's sort of a very phony vocabulary being used or an effort to sound avant-garde or to impress some technical manner. Usually a song is something a composer really feels that he wants to convey to another person. And as a result, I find them very truthful forms of music to indulge in.
Thank you, Mr. Argento. You speak of songs as letters, a way of reaching out to someone. Here's one of your songs, actually a letter written by Wolfgang Mozart to his father. Vern Sutton, well known for his many appearances on the Prairie Home Companion, is the tenor.
Manage things to perfection, so that is the way to persuade people, to win them over, to refuse petitions out of congenital stupidity, not to say a word to your master for lack of spirit and love of sycophancy, to keep a man hanging about for 4 weeks, and at last, when he is obliged to present the petition himself, instead of arranging for his admittance, to throw him out and give him a kick in the pants. I wrote 3 petitions, handed them in 5 times, and each time had them thrown back at me. And since the Archbishop was planning to leave on the next day, I was quite beside myself with rage and wrote another petition in which I disclosed to him that I had had a petition in readiness for the past 4 weeks. petition, I received my discharge. In the most gallant way, so seeing the reasons why I left him, no father could be angry with his own son.
From a set of songs that Dominic Argento wrote to Letters by Composers, we heard Mozart with guitarist Jeffrey Van and tenor Vern Sutton. Mr. Argento, can you speak about matching your composition to a particular performer?
I was so impressed, I think, when I first knew about Britten and Pears, when I discovered that Pears' whole career as a singer was because he was primarily a Britten interpreter, and that everything every note Britten wrote for tenor voice was specifically designed to work around Peter's limitations or range or his eccentricities. And that's also true of other composers, I think. And I have found that writing something specifically for Federico Estrada brought out the best I have in me. And I think that's true in every case, and was able to write music that fit the character of the singer very well. It was a case of where knowing the musical profile of the performer, want to come up with the kind of music, first of all, that they will like, and that fits them so well, they do it very well.
Thanks, Mr. Argento, for that insight into your work as a composer of vocal music. Since you mentioned Federica von Stade and the influence she had on your writing, let's hear a portion of the piece that you wrote with her in mind, Casa Guidi. In this piece, you use letters again for your text. These were written by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, describing her life in Florence with her husband, Robert Browning.
Piano instead. a city, and you in England can guess how beautiful, how fluent in illumination is. The pretty palace opposite to ours was drawn out in fire. You would have thought that all the stars out of heaven falling into the piazza. Sometimes he says to me, now, wouldn't it have been wrong if we two had not married? I do.
That was the first song of Dominic Argento's Casa Guidi, performed by the voice he had in mind while writing the work, Frederica von Stade. The Minnesota Orchestra was conducted by A.G. Owe. As I mentioned earlier, on October 27th, you can hear a whole Singing and Other Sins program of Argento's work, as well as the interview that Blair and I shared with him. Next, let's hear another art song composer with many talents. That is Larry Allen Smith, who is also a pianist, conductor, educator, poet, and arts executive. Dr. Smith was dean of the Hart School at the University of Hartford from 1990 to 1997 and returns to that position this year. Larry, where are you?
In Sulmona, Italy. A place that means a great deal to me because it's just a short distance from the village where my maternal grandparents were born. Yes, Larry Allen Smith, a composer with a most American name, is half Italian, Abruzzese, in fact, and a proud citizen of both the United States and Italy. If I were to use my Italian name, I would be known as Lorenzo Di Pietro, a name that would be at least somewhat exotic in most places other than Italy. Could my Italian ancestry be a reason I am so attached to vocal music? Absolutely. I wrote my first music at age 7. It was a one-page masterpiece on green construction paper that I called an opera. Thanks to my father, my love of words and my love of poetry started at about the same time. He was a poet by avocation, and he introduced me to many of the greatest poets of the English language. He also encouraged me to write poetry, something that remains a major aspect of my creative work. Unfortunately, he passed away when I was just 14, so he never had a chance to know what his influence meant to his composer-poet son. Although my catalog includes works for almost every medium, art song has been a constant throughout my life. When looking for a suitable text, I frequently read through dozens of poems before finding something that I really want to set to music. If a poem is right for me, I immediately hear music in the words, or at least fragments of music. There is never any doubt. The sounds of words have always suggested rhythms and melodic contours, and it is the relationship of music and words that drives me to write both art songs and poetry. Your listeners may find it interesting to know that I frequently set my own poems to music because the pacing and accents are so clear in my mind. In many ways, my music is my poetry, and my poetry is my music. I usually know who is going to sing the premiere of any song cycle before I start writing the music, and if I don't personally know the singer, I like to organize a meeting, when possible, so I can have a sense of his or her personality. And of course, getting to know the voice, their God-given instrument, is critical. After analyzing a text, I dig in, trying to capture my personal reaction to what the poet is trying to say. A composer is at once a partner with the poet, the singer, and the pianist. Epigrams, a set of songs for soprano and piano, was written in 2015 for soprano Sheree Kaluda. She premiered the work on a concert in Connecticut that celebrated my 60th birthday, and I was delighted to be the pianist for that performance. We later recorded the work, and that is the performance you will hear. There are 9 songs in the set, and the poems are by my dear friend Richard Nixon. That is Nixon with a CK, not an X. He was a remarkable poet who passed away in 2012 at the age of 95. The poems I selected provide a wonderful mix of sentiments, including several that are humorous. Overall, the songs are short, with all 9 totaling about 13 minutes.
Larry, I like the sentiment of the first song of your epigrams, sort of a be here now. Let's hear it.
As tomorrow's yesterday, so yesterday's tomorrow is today.
That was the first of Larry Allen Smith's epigrams, sung by Sheree Kaluda with the composer at the piano. Can you tell us about the final song of the set?
The 9th and final song, entitled Leah, is an extremely moving poem that the poet wrote to his wife. This is such a tender text that I wanted the music to be as simple and straightforward as possible. The chords in the piano provide a basic framework establishing the mood, and the singer is left to deliver the text. While I am proud of the resulting music, this song is about the poet's words. The composer, singer, and pianist are the supporting cast.
You are no longer you.
Thank you, Larry Allen Smith, for all that information about your whole art song compositional process, and of course for the beautiful songs themselves. Sherry Kaluda was the soprano, and Dr. Smith himself, the pianist. This is Singing and Other Sins, celebrating Labor Day with the words and works of composers who write art songs, the specialty of this program. The next composer is Peter Askim, a personal friend who played bass with me in the Honolulu Symphony Orchestra. Even then, an active composer, Dr. Askim went on to a multifaceted career as conductor, teacher, and music administrator. He's now the conductor of the Raleigh Civic Symphony and the director of orchestral activities at North Carolina State University. Peter, please tell us how you got into the art song writing business.
I've always loved vocal music, and I've written songs since I was a teenager. It's one of my favorite things to do. When I was living in Vienna, I learned basically everything I know about music from going to Liederabends and to the opera. I was there all the time. It's a huge part of the way that I write and hear and play and conduct music. I think God's cruel joke is this disconnect between how much I love the voice and how much I love vocal music and the voice that he gave me. I think anybody who says that the human voice is the most perfect of instruments has really never heard me sing. A lot of the music that I write is inspired by the other arts, whether it's paintings or literature or poetry. And songs are really the purest form of this for me. They combine so many of the things that I love into one art form. When I find a poem that really speaks to me, the music just seems to come right out of the poetry, whether it's the atmosphere that the language suggests or the rhythms and the meters. And in any case, the form, you know, where does the music begin? Where does it go? This is all inherent in the poem. So many times writing abstract or instrumental music, it's a challenge to find what does the piece want to be? Where does it want to go? Why does it want to go in this direction rather than that direction? And working with poetry, working with a pre-existing piece of art really helps me to be inspired to find a new way of using my musical language and sort of guiding me through a new way of thinking about sound in time. One of the things that's inherent in the compositional process for me is the fact that it's such a solitary activity. A composer has to make something out of nothing. And having a pre-existing poem and having a poet who's created this wonderful world and this wonderful sense of sound through time already makes it feel like I have a collaborator. It makes it not quite such a lonesome activity. And even if the poet is long gone, it's still a sense of community that's somehow missing from the compositional process for me so many times. Each time I've written songs, it's been a commission for a certain singer. I really love the process of getting to know somebody's voice and how they sound in different registers and the personality of the singer and how that comes through in the way that they make music. It's one of my favorite things to do is to try and create something for a certain artist. And I found that a lot of really great music has been written for specific musicians and then has entered the repertoire and has become universal. But I think there's something special about that personality of a specific singer or instrumentalist that really brings something to life. It's certainly true for me. Around the year 2000, the great soprano Judith Kellogg asked me to write a song cycle for her. She'd heard about a book of poems by the Vietnamese poet Ho Xuan Hung and translated by John Balaban. I did a lot of research on Vietnamese poetry and Ho Xuan Hung in particular, and I wrote a song cycle for her for soprano and double bass. One of the songs in the cycle was from this book of poems translated by John Balaban.
Thank you, Peter Askim, for that insight into your work. Let's pause now and hear that Balaban translation that you spoke of. This is Autumn Landscape, with your own double bass playing and the voice for whom you wrote the work, Judith Kellogg. What a wonderful song, Peter. Your bass playing, the voice of Judith Kellogg, all making a magic atmosphere in your autumn landscape. Tell us how your next Balaban project developed.
Many years later, I joined the faculty at North Carolina State University, and I discovered that John Balaban had started the MFA in creative writing there, and he was still on the faculty. We were colleagues now. We became fast friends, and we knew that we always wanted to work on a project together. When mezzo-soprano Jennifer Beatty joined the faculty also last year, I knew that she was the perfect voice for the poetry of Ho Suan Hung, and we decided to make a song cycle based on John's translations. The song that we'll hear today is part of that song cycle, and it's hot off the presses, brand new. When Gary Hickling asked me what music of mine I wanted to have performed on today's program, I thought this would be a great opportunity to kind of dive headfirst into this new song cycle. Rather than go back to an older piece, I thought, let's make this the world premiere of a brand new piece. So today is the first time we'll hear this new song in a recording made specifically for today's program. The song is Spring Watching Pavilion, and the poetry is by the 18th century Vietnamese poet Ho Suan Hung, and the translation is by poet John Balaban. The singer is mezzo-soprano Jennifer Beatty, and the wonderful pianist is from the faculty of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Clara Yang.
Oh,
Many thanks, Peter Askim, for honoring us with a world premiere on this Labor Day edition of Singing and Other Sins. The performers of Dr. Askim's work were mezzo-soprano Jennifer Beatty and Clara Yang, piano. On this Labor Day edition of Singing and Other Sins, we're also celebrating 30 years of art song on Hawaii Public Radio. The final hard-working composer who has written all kinds of music, including cabaret songs, also writes art songs, is William Bolcom, and he was too shy to speak to us, even though I did record an interview with him decades ago when he and his wife, Joan Morris, performed here in Honolulu. Mr. Bolcom recently wrote to me, "I haven't the slightest idea how the magic combination of words and music evolves. This after 6 decades of composing. I'd say study what's done, find what you want to do, and trust to luck." Well, Bill Bolcom has had his degree of luck, I guess. Let's hear Honolulu soprano Mary Chestnut sing his Amor with Bibi Freitas, piano.
It wasn't the policeman's fault in all the traffic roar. Instead of shouting halt when he saw me, he shouted amor, 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 amor. Even the ice cream man, free ice creams by the score. Instead of shouting butter pecan, one look at me, he shouted amor, amor, amor. All over town it went that way. Everybody took off the day. Even philosophers understood how good was the good, 'cause I looked so good. The poor stopped taking less, the rich stopped needing more. Instead of shouting no and yes, both looking at me shouted amor. Da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da. Da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da. Ba-dee-ba-dee-ba-dee-ba-dee-ba. Ba-dee-ba-dee-ba-dee-ba-dee-ba-dee-ba. My stay in town was cut short. I was dragged to court. The judge said I disturbed the peace, and the jury gave him what for. The judge raised his hand, and instead of desist and cease, judgy came to the stand, took my hand, and whispered amor, 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 amor. Night was turning into day. I walked alone away, never see the town again. But as I passed the church house door, instead of singing amen, the choir was singing amor. Da-dee-da-dee-dum, da-da-dee-da-dum, da-da-dum-da-dum.
That fun cabaret song was Amor by William Bolcom, performed by Mary Chestnut with Bibi Freitas piano. We have time for one more Bolcom song. This is Tis Not that dying hurts us so, to the poetry of Maya Angelou, with violist Michael Tree, soprano Benita Valente, and pianist Cynthia Rame. Thank you, Mr. Bolcom, for participating in the Labor Day edition of Singing and Other Sins. May you continue to labor on in the world of art song for many more years. We just heard your art song, "'Tis Not That Dying Hurts a Soul," with violist Michael Tree, pianist Cynthia Rame, and soprano Benita Valente. As I mentioned earlier, this program also marks the 30th anniversary of Art Song on Hawaii Public Radio. First, this program was called Great Songs, and recently it's Singing and Other Sins, the only radio program in the world that features Art Song, and it couldn't happen without the help of the staff of Hawaii Public Radio and the support from listeners like you. Many thanks. This is your host and producer, Gary Hickling. Aloha.